It's the 30th of April. Oh my goodness, May just flies by, folks. The last few weeks just fly by. So don't let up your guard. Don't let up your guard. Laura, where is she? Here she is. Because we have exam number 4 this Tuesday. So I'm sorry, this Thursday. Today is Thursday. And we have exam number 4, 9 and 10, the bond calculations. So that's worksheet number 3. Hybrid securities, the 3 questions. I gave them to you. They're on the back of the hybrid securities handout. Plus, they're on the website. I'll show you that. And then what we did last week with asset allocation and diversification. So worksheet number 3 has bond calculations. We'll go through it today, review it today. And it also has the chapter 6, constant, perpetual, and discounted cash flow models, because you have to be able to do those, okay? You can't leave business 123 without knowing how to discount a future stream of cash flows. So make sure you bring your calculator, a Scantron, 1 page of handwritten notes. You do not need the formula sheets. I will bring the formula sheets, so don't worry about that. I'll bring the formula sheets and the present value tables. Okay, now, we have one thing we do at the end of the semester. It's called Baffle the Broker. So pass these out, please. And what we do is we ask you to ask any questions you have about investments, finance, anything. And why is the sky blue? Where do babies come from? If you're so smart, how come you're not rich? And so any question at all about investments, and we make it into a presentation. And we sneak things in while we review for the final and review for your investment career. So please ask any questions. I'll give out more as we go along the rest of the semester, in case you forget or have another question. Because it's fun. I always think it's fun. And I think when people answer, when they ask silly questions, that's when it gets to be even more funner. When people ask me, like, you know, where do babies come from, or why is the sky blue? What would you do for a Klondike bar and things like that? Yeah, because then you get to answer silly questions. It's have silly answers. You get to create silly answers for those. But then serious questions too. I mean, you know, why do you think stocks are better than gold or better than whatever, something like that? Okay, or dividends, anything like that. Now, how are we doing? We have a motion on the floor. Ernesto's a little worried. This is what happens. This is going to happen to you. Well, but that's it. You have to remember, it's always good to hang on to your winners.
And give it all back.
Yeah, right. Well, we're not gambling, right? We would be normally doing our due diligence. We'd be continually doing our analysis and then reading whatever we can and looking at the annual reports and looking at the competitors. But this was a very speculative choice, PG&E, right? And so we won big. Well, we didn't think Qualcomm was going to do as well as it did. So Ernesto is suggesting that we sell PG&E because Thursday their first quarter earnings come out. So what do you think? Want to sell? He wants to sell. How many of you want to sell? It's called taking your profits off the table, taking your money off the table. How many want to sell? Raise your hands high. Come on, we need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How many want to hold? Oh, I don't know. The hold's got it there. Well, you didn't vote, Laura. What do you want to do?
I didn't see the earnings. That's why I can't decide.
Well, it's too late after the earnings. That's the problem. You know, I want to know what's going to happen first. That's called insider trading.
I think it's going to happen the same as Intel. We lost $700 on Intel.
But Intel's a long-term hold. They're not going anywhere, right?
But I mean, they didn't show any profits.
No.
What's
going to
happen?
Well, no, you know it's going to be ugly. But what I think personally is that people are just waiting to see what's going to happen with the bankruptcy, seeing how bad the stockholders are going to get hit. But I haven't been following it, so I don't really know. So, I'm sorry, Ernesto. You guys kind of got voted down there. So, although I was thinking maybe it was probably a good idea. But I always keep my mouth shut. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. Okay, so you guys are the best class ever. We were up 22% at the end of the week. We're still up almost 21.96%. So that's pretty darn good. All right, so we're going to today, we have a little treat for you. But before we do that, we're going to review, by the way, okay, remember the theme, it's wrong class, here it is. Remember that for chapter 18, on hybrid securities, here are the three questions on exam number 4, right? So, give you the questions for the, they're on the back of your handout, on the back of the assignment sheet. So you're not going to get these wrong, right? Nod your heads yes. You're going to get them correct. Yeah, nod your heads yes.
Chapter 18.
Yeah, I don't know why I called it chapter 18. Nobody's using the book, thankfully. It's a kind of boring book. But it's hybrid securities, on the back of hybrid securities. And they're on the website. What? And it's all on the website. I know people have it. Frank, the piano, you got a website? Wow. Cool. It just sometimes just drives you crazy. Okay. So what we're going to do now? Well, first we got a good joke. Who's got a good joke? Anybody? Uh oh. Let's hear.
Whereas, like, and it's, like, considered superficial for women to judge men. Because, like, the closest, like, that guy will ever get to be a 7 is, like, a chapter 7 to me.
Closest that guy will ever get to be a 7 is chapter 7, which means he's bankrupt. What do you call a bass player without a girlfriend? Homeless. Well, you would be musicians out there. Remember that joke. Right. If he doesn't have a girlfriend, he's homeless. Yes, because he's a bass player or drummer. He is drummer. What do you call a building filled with guitar players? Prison. It's a joke. It's about musicians. So if you're not a musician, you don't know what I'm talking about because they're starving all the time. Same thing is true for actors, but not teachers. So think about that. Teachers, you know, we get to eat. We don't get to make a lot of money, but we get to eat. Okay, so let's now turn our attention to worksheet number 2. And we are going to now go through the bond calculations. And by the way, those of you who snuck in late, baffle the broker who snuck in late. Pass this over to Arturo and Oliver. And who else over here? Raquel, did you get one? Okay. Half of the broker, you get to ask any questions at all about investments, finance, write them down. All right, so you need your bond value formulas and the present value tables. So a 7% 30-year bond. A 7% 30-year bond has a par value of 1,000. They always will have a face value, par value will always be 1,000. 7% fixed rate, call price of 1,030. So if they want to call it back from us, they've got to pay us $1,030. And it's callable in 10 years. What's the maturity? 30 years. It's a 30-year bond, so it's got a long way to go. All right? Now, it's currently selling for $1,060. So the market value is currently $1,060. So what's the current yield? Yield to maturity, yield to call. So who wants to tackle this one? Current yield. Eat pizza cake. Current yield. Yes, Eric.
Annual interest would be $70, which would be 7%. The market price would be $1,060.
Okay. So $70, not 7 cents. Don't put 0.07. That's be a dollar bound. $70 divided by 1,060. 0.066031. And you can leave it that way. But if you wanted to change it to a percentage, what would you write? 6.60%, 3 digits of accuracy, or if you used 4 digits of accuracy, 6.603. Don't just round it up to 7%. Not that that is wrong, it's not wrong, but it's just not the thing to do with bonds, because that means anything between 6.5% and 7.5%. And that's a pretty big spread in the bond world. So use at least 3 digits of accuracy for if you want to. Piece of cake? Okay, now, yield to maturity. Should we write out the formula? Okay, I will. Annual interest, and this is the formula that they used on the Series 7. They didn't ask you to do what, you know, the other stuff that we do. Plus the face value, par value, minus the market value, divided by the number of years to maturity, and then you divide that by the face value, par value, plus the market value, divided by 2, which gives us the average of the two. So we take the average and the bond. I know it confuses people. This is a minus sign and this is a plus sign, but they're two different entities. Here we're just calculating the average of the two. Here we're calculating an entity, a quantity, that allows us to take advantage of the fact that when the bond matures, we're going to get $1,000 back. If you were to use a market value of the same as the face value, in other words, if you were to use 1,000 minus 1,000, what happens when you 1,000 minus 1,000?
Zero.
Zero, right? And what happens when you take 1,000 plus 1,000 divided by 2? Well, 1,000. You get the average. The average of two numbers is that number. So you're right. So it would be the same. It would be exactly the same. In other words, it would be the current yield would equal the yield to maturity would equal to the coupon yield. Okay, so let's plug in the numbers. Let's use a different color. All right. So what's the annual interest? $70, not 7 cents. What's the face value always? 1,000 minus the market value. 1060 divided by how many years? 30. Right, 30 years to maturity. Then we take 1,000 on the bottom plus the 1060 divided by the 2. So I like to do the bottom first. It's up to you. 1,000 plus 1060 is 2060 divided by 2. So what is that? Some of you can do that in your head. 1030. And then, here's the tricky part. 1,000 minus 60... Everyone say negative 60. 1,000 minus 60? Negative 60. What does that mean? That means it's a premium bond and it's going to make its way down to 1,000. Divided by 30, negative 2. So what's happening is every year we're pulling $2 away from our interest, basically. So 70 plus or minus 2 is 68. Okay, so 68 divided by 1030? 0.066019, so you can leave it like that, or you can write it as 6.6602, just that is good enough, 4 digits, or 6.66%, either way, or just leave it like that. Cool, piece of cake. Now, the yield to call is exactly the same, except what do? We have, let's get another color. Color. You like colors? It's like kindergarten, you get to use crayons again. Very cool. Okay, so we take the annual interest. Oh, that's not a different color. Colorblind, Fiano. My wife says I'm colorblind, but I'm not. I just don't care. Annual interest. Okay, plus the face value minus, different color, the call value, the call divided by, instead of the number of years to maturity, number of years. What? No, I'm goofing up. Somebody yell at me. Yeah, I got it wrong. It's a call. You changed the face value to call value. Mm-hmm. Call, at least I caught myself. Call value minus the market value. Yeah, because you don't worry about the face value because that's not what you're going to get. Divided by the number of years to call. Thank you. And then the same thing on the bottom. You replace the par value with the call value. I'll get it. Plus the market value divided by 2. Cool? Make sense, everyone? All right, so now, what's the annual interest on a 7% bond? $70, always. $70. Down here, we have the call value of $1,030 plus the market value, $1,060, divided by 2. And some of you can do that in your head, just pick the middle number. But if you do the calculation, that's $2,090 divided by 2. So what is that? $1,045? Okay. I know, bonds are boring. What can I say?
No, pal, it's you. You're boring.
Call value, minus numbers, negative numbers. 1,030 minus 1,060? Negative 30 divided by how many years to call? 10. So we're going to take away $3 every year. 70 minus 3 is, oops, wrong color, 67. And so what does that come out to be?
0.064114.
Yeah, so 6.41, yeah, 1%. Cool, piece of cake? Yeah? Okay, good. Okie doke. Now, number 2. Yes.
Sorry, I got a number
3. Uh-oh, difference of opinion. Check it out. Guillermo here, Nicole. Yeah, that's yours. Did you get a Baffle the Broker yet? Baffle the Broker? Did you get a Baffle the Broker?
No.
Okay. Well, that's the tricky part, right? So we got 1,030 minus 1,060. What is it? Negative 30 divided by 10. Then that becomes, that's why I wrote the negative 3 above it. That becomes negative 3. 70 plus a negative 3 is 67. Well, you divide it by the number of years to call, not the number of years of maturity.
I divided
it by 30. Yeah, that's tricky. And those, at least 20 years ago, they give you the formula. They don't ask you to memorize the formula. But they want you to do this on the Series 7. I don't know if they still do. Okay, number 2. Let's do number 2 now. A married couple from California is in the 35% tax bracket, federal. That means they're making, you know, $500,000-$600,000. They're in the 11% California bracket, and they are looking at 3 different bonds: 6% Arizona, 5.5% California, and a corporate bond paying 8%. Do we do any calculations with the corporate bond? No. Everyone say no. Wait till I ask you. Do we do any calculations with the corporate bond?
No.
And so leave it alone. Now, the Arizona bond uses the federal only because it's a California couple. So California is going to say you have to pay us taxes on the interest you get at 11%. Whereas the feds can't charge you taxes. So it's federal only. What's the formula? You take the muni bond yield divided by 1.0, 100% basically, minus the federal bracket. That's your end. I didn't need the parentheses here. So what's the muni bond yield for the Arizona bond? So what should we write? 0.06. What's the federal bracket? So 1 minus 0.35 is 0.65. So what is the Arizona bond yielding to us on an after-tax basis? 92307. Is that what everybody else got? So 9.231 you could leave, or 9.23, three digits or four digits of accuracy. Cool. So right off the bat, we know that the Arizona is better than the corporate. Now, the California is a little tricky. There are two ways of doing it. There's the easy way, which is not necessarily very representative of these people in these tax brackets, because normally they have huge deductions. And then there's the trickier way, which we'll use. Now, on the exam, I don't know. You can do either one, I guess. But I guess I'm going to ask you to do it. I'm going to give you the formula. I don't know. You decide. Whichever one. Just make sure you're right. I did the easy way. Or I did the harder way. But it's not that much harder. Just plug in a few more numbers. So that formula is equal to the muni bond yield again. But now we have to take it, not only the federal bracket, we have to also worry about, now remember, notice the parentheses are very important, the state tax bracket. But because most people in this rarefied air of making, $600,000, they have a huge, deductions, well, actually, the mortgage deduction is usually their biggest deduction. They have $1 million house and the like. But no, they can only do $10,000 of state and local taxes. So that really screwed California and the East Coast and a few other places up in Seattle and Chicago. So you take the 1 minus the federal bracket again. So you see you're doing it basically twice. You're doing 1 minus the federal bracket twice. So all you got to do is go in from the inside and start working your way out. So 1 minus the federal bracket, what's the federal bracket? 35%. And then the state bracket is 11%, and the federal bracket, again, is 35%. So now we just have to work our way out. 1 minus 35% is 0.65. Then multiply that, 11%, 0.11 times 0.065.
0.0715.
Come on, do it. Make sure you do it. That's why you got calculators. You can't ask Kathleen or Eric on the exam. Don't do it. Don't do that. Do it yourself. Okay, so 11.11 times 0.65 is 0.0715. Now we have to add it to the 0.35. And what did we get? We have to add it now. Now we're here. Am I going too fast? 0.4215. Is Eric right?
Yes.
Okay, and then, don't forget the 1 minus out front. So 1 minus 0.4215 is 0.5785. So the muni bond yield was 5.5%, which is 0.055. Everybody got that? So 0.055 divided by 0.5785 is equal to, is that like 10% or something? Not quite. 9.507%. So the California bond turns out to be the better deal on an after-tax basis. Remember, the answer keys are online. full? Okay, good. All right, so now let's do number three. Number three. Using annual compounding. So here's where you need the, they're going to need the, everybody got their sheet? Got a sheet there, Rico? S1 to Arturo. Do you have this package, Arturo?
Yes.
The chapter 11? Okay. Okay. Okay, fine. What am I going to do? I'm going to mute this guy. Ouch, 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 ouch. Just banged my chin. I don't know what I'm doing. Okay, so tell me, talk to me. What is this? Number 3A. So it's a 7% bond priced, 8% 20 years, priced to yield 5%. So before we go any further, we bought it when interest rates were 8%. Interest rates have fallen to 5%. What should we expect? A premium bond. We should expect a bond that's selling for more than $1,000. If we get something that's selling for less than $1,000, or if you get something that's selling for about $1,000, you didn't do it right. Okay. So, what's an 8% bond paying? Oh, wait. First, let's do the formula. And this is where I was just checking out last night, just checking out flights to Zihuatanejo, and then they're going to take the bus up to PV, and then back from PV to flights to from PV. $100. Flights from Puerto Vallarta to Tijuana, $100. The flights. I'm sorry, PV. Puerto Vallarta. So present value. I'm sorry, I digress. Present value of the interest income plus the present value of the principal repayment. And this is exactly the same formula as the discounted cash flow. But we use dividends for stocks and the expected price of the stock in the case of stocks, but here we know that unless the bond goes into default, we're going to get this interest income. I mean, it's in the contract; it's part of the deal, and we're going to get it every year. So we could do this calculation 20 years, like we did for 2 or 3 years in Chapter 6, but that's kind of stupid. That's why we have the two tables. We have the one table that does the same payment for a series of years, and then the other table is the same table before. So if we're going to get how much from the bond, 88% bond?
$80.
What is that $80 a year for the next 20 years worth to us today? We go over to what it's priced to yield. Don't use the 8%. Use the 5%. Go over to 5%, down 20 years on the table on the left, the table that tells us the 12.462? Everybody got that? Okay. And then we're going to get $1,000 back. This is always going to be $1,000 in this class. $1,000, and then that's a one-time payment, so we use the table on the right. Go across the 5%, down 20 years. 0.377. Excellent. So now this one you need your calculator for. This one, a lot of you can do in your head, right? 1,000, just move the decimal point three to the right, or do the calculation. Now, $80 times 12.462. Did we do this on?
Yeah, we did this last class.
Oh, we did this one? I'm sorry.
We didn't do B, though.
We didn't do B, okay. So 996.96 plus 317 is? Okay, I'm sorry. Well, we didn't do the rest of worksheet 2.
No, $73. Otherwise, the 96.
Ooh. But we didn't do the other ones, right? We didn't do the first two. Yeah, okay. We just did 3A. So now we'll do 3B. Let's do 3B. So what do we got here?
6%.
A 6%.
10-year.
That's priced to yield 9%. So 6%, we bought the bond when prices were 6%. Interest rates have risen. We expect this bond to be a discount bond. So again, present value of the interest plus the present value of the principal. And so we're going to get how much from a 6% bond? Don't put 6 cents. And then we're going to get $1,000 back when the bond matures. And so using the table on the left that gives us the present value multiplier for a stream of payments, go across to 9%, down 10 years. 6.418. And then on the table on the right, which gives us a one-time payment, 0.422. So we can do the one on the right easily. Just move the decimal point 3 to the right. And 60 times, so it's 385.08. So you add those two together and you get a pitiful sum. 700 and what? 807 dollars and 8 cents. So indeed, if interest rates have jumped 300 basis points at 3%, we would get hammered on our bond. But if we don't sell our bond, do we care? If we don't have no intentions of selling our bond? Okay, now, so that was worksheet number 2. Worksheet number 3 has the same three oops. Sorry about that. You want to hear the world's shortest poem? Okay. It's by Ogden Nash, and it's called Fleas. Adam had 'em. Fleas. I don't know why I thought of that. The world's shortest poem. Adam had 'em. Okay, so now, so these three are basically the same as what we just did. So now let's review. Let's go back to chapter 6. Because as we said, the most important thing for you before you leave this class is know how to discount a stream of future cash flows. And this is what we're doing with what we just did here. The bonds. But bonds are boring. And some of you, it's funny, some of the online students are real, I guess I don't know what it is, because they're all, that's the one thing. Anybody taking online classes? No? You're all alone, basically. That's what the students often say. I feel so lonely, I feel so isolated. And so, in a group, you can see other people nodding their heads and going, yeah, I can do this, I can do that. But I guess when you're by yourself, you're like, no way, I'm not touching those stocks. Look what happened to these companies. Look what happened. I don't want anything to do with them. Okay, that's your decision. And we get the bonds. Like, oh, I feel a lot better about bonds. They have to do discussion forums. I feel a lot better about bonds. Like, okay, good. And now, number 4. ExxonMobil. You ever hear them? What do? Oil. Right. They find it. They drill it. They refine it. And they sell it. Vertical. It's called vertical integration. They do everything. Not all companies do that. Some companies just, find it, some companies drill it, some companies transport it, some companies refine it, some companies sell it, but they do everything. So they're selling for $83, at least they were a few weeks ago, I don't know what it is now. And the dividend is currently $3.28. They've been growing their dividend at a constant rate, I got to throw that name, that word in there, constant rate of 5%. Constant growth rate. So which formula do we use? The constant perpetual growth model, which is Department of Redundancy Department. Okay. So if we require a 9% required, expected, desired rate of return, they all mean the same thing, what's the formula? Anybody remember off the top of their head? I'll give you the formula sheet. Remember what it is, Laura? No? Okay, it's the annual dividends times 1 plus the dividend growth rate, the constant dividend growth rate. And then we divide that by our required, desired, expected, whatever rate of return, K. I don't like why they use K. That's a strikeout in baseball. Required rate of return minus the dividend growth rate. Does that look familiar? Okay, again, I'll give you the formula sheet and the present value tables and the like. But, you know, do this. I would do worksheet number 3 a couple of times before Thursday morning. So what's the annual dividend? $3.28 times 1 plus the growth rate of? Growth rate of? 5%, yeah, 1.05, right? So 1 plus 0.05 is 1.05. And then divide that by our required rate of return, 9% minus the dividend growth rate. So 0.09 minus 0.05, that's a minus sign. Okay, so he's way ahead of me here. So 0.09 minus 0.05 is? 3.28 times 1.05 is 3.444. And you get about $86?
$86.10.
So it's selling for about 83. Is this a potentially good investment for us? Is oil going away?
No.
Even if every car were electrified, which ain't going to happen for dozens of years. I mean, think about people driving. I still have a 96 Toyota Previa, which is still purring like my brother-in-law wants to buy it from me. We just use it to move stuff around. But I mean, that car is never going to die for another 50 years. So even if every new car were sold or were electric, there's still going to be need for oil. And you wear oil, and we use it for plants, and we use it for materials. Every piece of plastic is made out of oil. So is Exxon a good long-term investment?
Yes.
But did we compare it against Chevron and ConocoPhillips and BP and Royal Dutch Petroleum yet?
No,
we got to look at the alternatives, right? Good. Well done. Okay, now, who is this? AbbVie. That's a silly name, isn't it? Well, they were spun off from Abbott Labs, yet another company that has been a tremendous long-term investment, and they spun them off a few years ago. They're pharmaceutical, and they've got some pretty amazing drugs in the pipeline, which, you know, that's the problem with drug companies. You never know. If it works out, oh boy, everybody's happy. But if it doesn't work out, the stock takes a dump. But they'll be back. So, it's assumed it's the beginning of the year, make life easy. They're a pharmaceutical firm recently spun off from Abbott Labs. They're selling for $84. We expect their dividends to be $4.28, $2020, $4.48, $2021, $4.68. And we are thinking we could sell the stock at the end of 2021 for about $112 per share. I don't know, Value Line tells us, or we do our own calculations, or somebody else, we look at somebody else who gives a timely information. And our required rate of return is 9%. So using the discounted cash flow model, value of the stock equals the present value of the future dividends plus the present value of the stock, price of the stock in the future, the expected price. Some people, especially in the online class, they tend to use the current market value. No. Use the future price. Even though we know it's not going to be the right price. So how do we do these? Do you remember how to do these? How I like to do them is set up a spreadsheet. Future, so the years, future cash flows, the present value multipliers for whatever. Oh, in this case, we want 9%. Yeah, 9%. And then the discounted cash flows. I know, what a stupid... It has nothing to do with Target or pennies and having a sale. We call them discounted because we discount the future back to the present. That's the verb we use. So 2019, 2020, 2021, the cash flows, what do we expect in 2019? $4.28? Yeah? Do I see where we get that? And what do we expect for next year? $4.48. And then what do we expect for 2021? $4.68. Plus, we think, we expect, we guess that the price is going to be about $112 a share. So we add those two together. And what is that? $4.48 plus $116.68? Right? And now, we go to the present value table, the old one. Or you could use this one, because it's the same one. But make sure you don't use the one on the left. Use the one on the right. It's the same one as chapter 6. I'll give you both, though. So go to 9%. What's the first present value multiplier? 917. Year number 2? 842. Year number 3? 772. And we multiply each of these and then add them up. So 428 times, and this is where your memory plus can make life easier for you, because then you don't have to type them all in again. But either way, 428 times 0.917, 4.108, 448 times 0.842, all right, Laura, 772, and then $116. 0.68 times 98.076 and you don't have to use all the digits, it's up to you. Oh, 90. I'm sorry, not 98. 90.07, did I get that right? Okay. 90.07, okay. So add those three up, and you get... $98.957. So almost $98. You know, just again, we're not trying to be precise. So is this model saying that AbbVie is a pretty good deal? What's it selling for? $84. The model is saying, hey, we think it's worth $98 or so, you know, give or take. And the model model is saying it's worth about 98, and it's selling for 86. So this model is actually saying it's a good deal. We have a whole lot more work to do. This is just tilting us in the right direction. And then we got to do a whole, we got to look at their competitors and read everything we can about them. Do the ratio analysis, make sure they can make their payments. Interest payments and the like. And that's the easy part. The hard part is making the judgment about whether we want to buy or sell or look at their competitor or whatever. Or there's something better. Cool? What do you think? Okay, cool. All right, so now, if you go to the website, you'll see that I have... I sneak this somewhere in the semester somewhere, either at the end or sometimes right after chapter 6, and it's called Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return. Now, we're basically just going back to chapter 6, what we've just done in this chapter, and taking a look at it in a more, I don't know what to call it. This is what, what you will see if and when you take an upper division or graduate level finance and investments class. So that's basically what we're doing. So I've already put them on the hard drive here. So net present value. An optional impromptu discussion of net present value and internal rate of return. Not going to be on the exam, folks. This is not on the exam. Okay, so don't worry. No. Yeah, we don't have to do, but this is what you're going to see if you go to State or one of the private universities and take a, you know, upper level division class or certainly graduate. They're going to really throw this at you in graduate school, and they're going to do a whole lot more, which a lot of it is, I think, ridiculous. After this presentation, you throw this thing stuff in. We've already done the spreadsheets. You saw the spreadsheet. If you go to come to the investment club, we do them a lot. I think the students are sick of them by now. But we do them a lot in the investment club. You've already created these models, these discounted cash flow models. Now let's take it one step further. Present value and valuation. A fundamental assertion of finance holds that the value of a stock or any investment is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Dividends, stock prices, interest payments, principal repayments, rent if it's a real estate project. But present value is not limited to stocks and bonds. We can calculate the present value of a future stream of income from any sources. Factories, bridges, water projects, nuclear reactors. You already know how to compute the present value of any stream of income. You know that you can use this scary formula, but you don't have to use the formula. We use the present value tables. But if you want to use these formulas, they're pretty, you know, once you put it in the spreadsheet, it's done. In this version, the cash flows were dividends, and the price of the stock, when we forecast, we were ready to sell. But it could be rent from a real estate project, bridge tolls from a bridge, water authority, the electricity generation. So here's the example we've used that we started with, we come back to. We've got this present value equal to the present value of future dividends. Here are the dividends in this year, next year, two more years. And then we think, value line tells us, we do our trajectory, what we think it's going to be in a few years, $27. And we're expecting a required rate of 12%. And what we did is we calculated the present value. And we're going to get to net present value in a bit. The present value is what we believe the stock is worth right now. It's selling for $22. We believe it's worth a little bit more, $23.81. So if our required rate of return is 12%, this is a pretty good stock to buy. And then we created the spreadsheet, which made life a whole lot easier. And we saw that, yeah, that using the spreadsheet, it gives us, it makes make life a lot easier. And then, of course, we can use the computer. Since 2381 is greater than the current market price, that tends to trip people up. We have to pay. No. We're paying $23.02 for it. We think it's worth $23.81. Then we would consider this a potentially good investment for our required rate of return. The present value told us what we thought the future stream of income was worth today. And if it were roughly equal to or greater than the current market price, what we had to pay for that future stream of income, then we predicted that this was a pretty good return for us, for our desired required rate of return. But remember, all you got to do is change that required rate of return, and oh my goodness, do the models all of a sudden go wild. I mean, the changes are sometimes very dramatic. Because as you change the required rate of return, the present value changes sometimes greatly. So, what is NPV? Net present value. And that's what they're going to stress in graduate school. They're going to be, no, we don't want to know present value. What net present value? Which is the same thing. Net present value takes into account all cash flows, inflows, money coming in, and all cash outflows. And if net present value is positive, then it is a potentially good investment. If net present value is negative, then it's a potentially not a good investment. It's the same thing except we have to include all outflows, which makes sense, especially when there are outflows that happen in the middle or at the end of your investment life. It is much more popular when you get to upper division, graduate level finance classes at the university. So here is a net present value. Sometimes they put P0, price at time zero, or T0. In other words, we pay $22, there's the outflow that we had to pay to get this stream of income, and then here comes the inflows. And if we take that outflow into the mix, we wind up with a positive net present value. So what we're saying is, this thing is worth $1.60 more than what we have to pay for it. That's basically what we're saying. It's positive because the present value is greater than the market price. I mean, that's all they're saying. So, are you sick of and tired of calculating present value using the present value tables? Yes? No? Darn. I haven't done my job. My job is for you to be dreaming about this stuff. In the middle of the night, you go, oh, I see present value table, you know, table. You know how to calculate, understand what it means to discount a stream of future value, future cash flows, and I've done my job. And it's easier than using the exponential formulas. But you also know how to use the easy way. I hope some of you play with the spreadsheets, because spreadsheets make it so much easier. So let's now take another look, this time adding net present value. So let's make sure I go. Okay. So let's go to the spreadsheet, which is already on the computer here. And so, are you still on? So here's the spreadsheets that we created. You saw a few of them. Here's the present value where we just looked at the future cash flows. And we put a required rate of return of 12%. And we saw that that changes as we change the required rate of return. And then we don't have to do all this. We don't have to do all this because spreadsheets have a present value calculation built in. So let's take a look at that present value calculation. Okay. So here we did all that we do. So notice, see here, the spreadsheet is creating that this table. The spreadsheet is creating this table on the fly. It's saying, where is it? Where did it go? Yeah, here it is. 1 divided by the required, 1 plus the required rate of return to the first power, to the second power, to the third power, to the fourth power. So it's making these numbers. It's calculating these numbers because it can. It's a computer. It can do it a whole lot faster than we can do it and more accurately. But with a formula, you don't even type in. You don't have to type in these present value multipliers because we just type in the cash flows, and then we have a net present value formula that says what's the required rate of return. We require 12%, and that's sitting right there, from B13 to B16. Now, here's the net present value calculation. We put in the negative $22 that we have to pay for the item, for the investment at time zero, and then the cash flows. And then it's the same formula, net present value, but this time it includes a cash outflow, and we wind up with $1.60. Cool? Is that cool? Okay, great. Now, what's going on here? And then here, we'll come back to this in a bit. Here is a graph of the net present values if we change the rate anywhere from 0 up to 20%. And we see at 0%, the thing is worth about $14. And as our required rate of return gets higher and higher and higher, and here is where we expected it to be 12%, and it was like $1.60. And then here is the point where net present value now becomes negative. All of a sudden, we're going to come back to that in a bit. So, let's go. Okay. This brings us back to internal rate of return. The very popular measure that business people and investors use when measuring the rate of return from a stream of future income. You will also learn how to compute the internal rate of return manually if you go to an upper division or graduate level finance class. Specifically, the internal rate of return is the desired required rate of return. We initially said we want 12%. But what the spreadsheet is going to do for us and what you have to do manually one or two times, hopefully your prof won't be a sadistic individual, is you find where that net present value crosses the zero, where it becomes zero. Huh? The internal rate of return is the desired required rate of return where the net present value equals zero. Well, see, it's easier to show you than it is to explain it to you. So let's go back to the spreadsheet. And so what we did, watch what happens as we change the. So right now we've got $1.60, right? If we go to 5%, it says, hey, $7.60. If we go to 16%, it says, whoa, wait a minute. You know, it's not worth it to you. You want something different. Because if you want 16%, which I don't think you should want, but if you wanted 16%, it ain't going to do it for you. And so that's what we did here. What we did for already is we typed in these numbers, zero. Actually, I didn't type none. Okay, I created this column and then let it do its thing. It did it all. And so as the required rate of return gets higher and higher and higher, the net present value becomes less because it's worth less to us until finally it crosses that line. And now here's how you have to do it manually. You have to choose. Okay, let's try 12%. Oh, it's positive. Okay, how about 16%? Oh, it's negative. And then what you have to do is, okay, try 13%. And then 15%. See what you have to do? You have to work your way until finally you get to 0%. That's a pain in the ass. I mean, it's not that hard. It just takes a whole lot of time. That's why we have computers. Any math majors in here? Do you know what that's called? That when you do that? It's called Newton's method, but it's just trivia. At a bar sometime, you want to. I got a trivia question for you. Okay, write down these four cities. Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Reno, and San Diego. Which city is further west? Which city? She's got it already.
Reno.
Is Reno further west than Los Angeles?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Check it out on the map. That'll get you some money on a bar, in a bar some night when somebody's really drunk. There's a Los Angeles. No. Because California goes like this. Okay. So you got it? You see what's happening here? That's what they're going to make you do once or twice, and then you'll use the spreadsheet to do it. So now, back to the cards. Okay. So how do you do it? Without a spreadsheet, it ain't easy. It's a real pain in the ass. Whatever. I have not done it since I left graduate school. Plus, as we saw in the spreadsheet, we're not there yet. Okay, so now let's start using internal rate of return, because this is when you start talking with the big boys and girls, they want to know internal rate of return. And again, we have a spreadsheet that does it for us. So here's the same cash flows, negative $22, and then the cash inflows, and we use the formula. It's pretty easy to use. This is what spreadsheets are all about. Internal rate of return from B3 to B7. You know, if you haven't used spreadsheets, play with a spreadsheet. It's not that hard. And then we guess at 12%. You can actually leave it at zero, and the spreadsheet will try to do its thing. Now, if your cash flows, sometimes internal rate of return cannot be calculated. Your cash flows might be really, really strange, and it'll come back saying, I don't know what to do with this. NA, it'll say not applicable. But most of the time, if it's a reasonable investment, it'll come back and say, okay, I got it. Okay, cool? And then, here's our original one. Watch what happens to the present value when we plug in 1451. The present value becomes the same as what we paid for it. See? Make sense? Okay, if not, don't worry about it. You already know how to do that. Okay, so now, we use the yield to maturity approximation formulas, the yield to call approximation formulas. That's what they ask you to do on the Series 7, at least that's what they used to ask you to do. But to be precise, we really should use something along these lines. We should type in the whatever the rate is and the price. And watch what happens as we type in let's make it a discount bond first. We put in a price that we only paid $900, so our initial cash outflow for the bond was $900, but it's an 8% bond, so we're going to get $80 for those years. And then finally we get our interest payment and our $1,000 back. And the approximation that we used was 9.47%. But the internal rate of return calculation, which is more precise, actually tells us the bond is 9.6%. But it's a pain in the neck to do it. You know, they're not going to ask them the Series 7. And, of course, the net present value always winds up being zero because we're paying for what we're getting. bonds are, you know, you pay, bonds are fixed. And then if we had a premium bond, then we would wind up getting less. The approximation tells us we're getting 6.67, and the internal rate of return says, no, you're really only getting 6.60. Cool? So you can use it for bonds, right? And get a very precise measurement. And then, what about real estate? Now, going out, anybody interested in real estate? We're going to talk about real estate in a couple weeks before we end. Real estate is a pain, real pain in the patootie, folks. It's really difficult. But it can be very profitable. And what many of us as individuals will do is we'll eventually buy a home. And so we have some real estate investment. It's our home. You can't live in a mutual fund or a stock. But you can live in a house. And it will, assuming San Diego is not getting more undesirable, it's becoming more desirable. But sometimes people pay way too, I think prices now are not too bad, but they're pretty expensive. So sneaking around Chula Vista, you can find a duplex, not in the best area and probably not in the best condition, for around $480,000, $500,000. Anybody look? Use Zillow or Trulia, or if you need a good real estate agent, I can give you a good real estate agent. He is very honest, which is unusual in this industry. And I tell you true things about stockbrokers too, don't worry. And he sends me these things periodically to check out. And so there are a few of them out there. Usually we're looking like $550,000, $600,000. But let's say we got a duplex for $480,000. Now, do we pay for these things in cash? No. But let's say you did. Let's say you had $480,000 lying around the house. Now, what's the income we're going to receive? Could we reasonably get $1,600 from a one-bedroom, two units, one bedroom, two bedrooms each? If they're one bedrooms, what are they getting? Two units. $1,500? 12 or 13? Yeah, maybe you're right. Other people, I go on Craigslist and I see people asking for one bedrooms. What? Renting it out. Yeah, what kind of rent are we going to get? Let's say 12. Let's say, how about $1,250? Will you take that? Now, we also should probably take some, you know, we have to pay taxes and we have to pay insurance, so we should net that out. But let's leave it for the rent. Now, we're assuming that the rental income is growing about 2% a year. It's actually been growing more than that, but it goes in spurts. And so after 30 years, let's say at the end of the 30 years, it's now worth $1 million. Do you think that could happen? It could double. No? I don't know. What happened over the last 30 years? In 30 years. Yeah.
It just doubled in just how many years? 20 years.
Well, it doubled and then fell by half and then doubled again. Right? That's the problem with real estate. You got to buy at the right time. But as long as you're in, so let's say, so if we only get $1,250 as starting, what it's saying is, you know, the net present value is negative. It's not really. We're expecting 10%. I put my acquired rate of return at 10%. I put that in here, 10%. But it's saying you're going to get about 8.4%. So if we change it, if we're just happy with 8%, let's change it to 8%. Oops, it didn't like that. 80%. Now, you see what happens? See what happens when you change it to 80%? It says, forget it, buddy. You're out of your mind. It's not worth anything. You're not going to get 80%. If we put in 80%, then it's saying, yeah, it's a good deal. Go ahead. But do people buy real estate with $480,000 down? No, they have to put down a down payment. So let's change it now to about one quarter of this. You put the, actually like 0.3%. Woo. So 30%. So you multiply it times. So you only need about 150 grand to get in. But what do you have to pay now? Interest and a mortgage, right? So that's going to pull whatever it is. I didn't do the count. I should have done the calculation beforehand. Let's say four. I'm sorry. I'm going to do that right now, real fast. Oops. Excuse. So plus 480. So we're getting a mortgage for about 336. A mortgage at, say, 5% would be this divided by 1,000 times, what is it, 4.5, let's say. What do you mean? That's not right. No, 4.5. What's going on here? F2, make it bigger. Ah, what am I doing wrong? What is the, 4.5? What's somebody telling me 4.5? What is wrong?
I think it reads that as
like 500. Yeah, there we go. I got it. So $1,500 a month. So we have to subtract minus, let's just leave it at 1512. Now we have to. Okay, there we go. So we're not getting the full rent. Right? We have to pull money out. We're paying $1,500 a month for 30 years for the mortgage. So we're not getting as much rent. But what does it tell us? Aha! Because we used other people's money to make our money, even though we're paying the bank $1,500 a month now, we get a better rate of return. And that's why the real estate agents and the real estate people scream and jump up and down when we say real estate's returned about 7, 8% over decades. They go, no, he's not comparing apples to apples. It's because in real estate we use leverage. We use other people's money to make our money. Does that make sense? And we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that later because we're going to learn how we can do the same thing in stocks, just not as much. We can't do it as much. In real estate, it used to be, during the bubble in the 2000s, you could have 10% down if you're non-owner occupied, which means investment property. If you're going to live there and you're a first-time home buyer, 3% down, 5% down, because they want people to own a home. But if you're the real estate investor, they now want 25%. So who's got 150 grand laying around the house? It's not easy. Okay, so you understand how it's going working out? And we're going to see that in stocks. In stocks, they went 50% down. You have to buy it. You'll see that next week.
Can you put the very young number, the 108,000?
That's saying net present. This is what you're going to, when you speak at the language in the graduate level school. They're saying this project has a net value of 108 grand. When all said and done, you're going to create $100,000 worth of value from this project. See, does that make sense? Yeah. What we did is we calculated the present value. We did not include what we had to pay to do the investment. And then we said, if it's greater than what we paid for it, cool. If it's less than, so if we did the one we did, if we did the model we did, what would we would see is that this would be $144,000 more. We would say, oh, we're paying $144,000 for it, but we're getting, $250,000. We think it's worth $250,000. You see? That's how we do it in here, because I think it's just a hell of a lot easier. And this, to me, seems a little, not, I shouldn't use the word elitist, but net present. But once you get into the world of finance, where the numbers, where you wind up with a lot more zeros, that's what they're going to want you to talk. They're going to want you to speak the language, okay? Okay, so that was cool. Did you see real estate? Is real estate a great investment? Yes, it can be, and it can be a nightmare. A literal nightmare, folks. So be careful. But what if, we just get to what Laura said. What if now you're working at a utility company or a port district or whatever, and you're looking at building an airport? or a nuclear reactor. Same idea. Except you see all the zeros? It just gets a whole lot bigger, right? So let's say we had to build a nuclear reactor, and it costs us $2.5 billion. But we're going to generate $250 million a year in electricity. And we're going to raise that. We'll assume it raises with inflation. And then after 30 years, what happens to the nuclear reactor? Yeah, you got to decommission it. But that's a whole political problem right now. So that means you got to spend another $1 billion to take it apart. Why aren't they doing that? Why is Santa Onofre, even though it hasn't been in operation for years, why aren't they taking it apart and decommissioning it? Do you know? Because they don't know what to do with the damn rods. The uranium is sitting in the ground. They don't know what to do with it. There's no place to store it, so all the nuclear reactors have to store it at the nuclear reactor until the United States gets around to actually deciding where to put all this crap. They want to put it in some mountain out in Nevada or Yucca Mountain. Have you heard of that? But it's supposedly right on a fault line. Okay, and you know this stuff has to sit for hundreds of thousands of years. It's got a half-life of 25,000 years. So in 25,000 years, half of the plutonium would be gone. And another 25,000 years, one-quarter of it will be gone. And then another 75,000, one-eighth of it will be gone. And 100,000 years, there'll still be a 16th of it sitting around. And that stuff is really dangerous, plutonium. Don't eat plutonium. It's not good for you. Okay? But here's where you get some really weird, you might want to make the graph because you can get some really strange results. Let's take a look. Here's two different investments. The first one, you pay $10,000, and the next year you get $15,000. Is that cool? 50% return on your value? Internal rate of return says. Here's one, they give you $10,000, but next year you got to pay $15,000. And the internal rate of return says that that's a 50% return on your investment. So you got to be careful, right? Sometimes it gives you really weird results. So we must always check. We must always check if the results make sense. Cool. Okay, so let's go back. All right, so as we saw with the spreadsheet, internal rate of return can give you some very bizarre and unreliable results. Sometimes there can be more than one internal rate of return. And you'll see that if you see the graph. You'll see the graph start off like this, and then it goes below the line, and then it comes back up, and then it goes below the line again. So there are actually two or three internal rates of return. So you have to be really careful. You have to look at it, especially if it's odd, unusual streams of cash flows. But the ones that we deal with, stocks, bonds, and maybe real estate, it's not going to happen. Okay, so I like to want to see, make sure our internal rate of return is reasonable. So how does having a spreadsheet change the way we do our calculations? And the answer is not much. But it makes it much easier. Tables aren't that hard, are they? And it gives you an extremely precise result when calculating your rate of return from a stream of future income, which is exactly what we do not want you to rely on. Okay? I hope we have impressed upon you the need to not make any bold predictions like this is what it's going to be. Forget it. You're blowing smoke. Because unless you're calculating the return from a very predictable source, bonds, precision is your enemy. Never forget you're predicting the future, and as the old saying goes, prediction is difficult, especially about the future. You like that one? Suppose it's been attributed to Niels Bohr, who was the guy who created the hydrogen atom model, the proton with the electron going around it. Or it's been attributed to Mark Twain. He probably wasn't Mark Twain. Probably Niels Bohr. So thank you for your time. Is that cool? And now, see, here's a little dirty little secret. You're going to go to State or some other place, and they're going to treat you like, you're going to be, so much more sophisticated and erudite. It's the same crap. Okay? You already know what it takes to be prudent, long-term oriented investors. You already know that you have all the tools you need. Now, There are dozens of other models, folks. I showed you the ones I think are the best, but there are others. And a couple of you, when you gave in, oh, that was the online class, I think. Some of you gave in the Chapter 8 assignments, the bonus assignments, which you could basically say whatever your damn well please. But some of the people in the online class said, this is cool. I'm going to try this out. I'm like, okay, good luck. Just a couple. Just two, the more gambly type folks. All right, so that's it. Now, to review, okay, so what I would like you to do now is a couple of questions. We'll give you another opportunity Thursday, another opportunity next week, and then I put these, make these into a presentation for our last review class.
We're not supposed to do this today.
No, but if you want to, because I have some people, they just forget about it. Oh, I forgot. But if you want to pick it, bring it back on Thursday, that's great. But if you have your questions now, I'll give you more of these. I'll make more of these because I like this. This is my fun. I really have a lot of fun time with it. Okay, so Carlos is here. Okay, not here. All right. Turn in your assignments, even if they're late. I'll stick around for a few more minutes. If you want to go do any other problems in chapters 10 or 6 or 6. Getting an education? Cool. Okay. So, Edgar, yes, Raquel, okay, you're sticking around. John is here, Arturo is here, Thomas Gutierrez, no, Kathleen, Carlos, Guillermo, Jonathan Moore, no, Aram, Nicholas, thank you. Okay, how are you doing, Nicholas? Yang, how are you doing?
Doing good.
You're doing good? You're doing great. I'm really proud of you, Yang. Because I know I speak sometimes too quickly, right?
Okay.
Is it okay? Okay, I apologize. Joshua, Oliver's here. Ramel is here. Susana, Andrea is here. Okay. Yes. Nick.
Ooh.
Okay. Have a seat. I'm going to show right now. You don't have to. You can leave. But Matthew asked a great question. How do you do that? Now remember, everything's on the website. If you go to chapter 8. You'll see a presentation on how to do it, technical analysis presentation. But let's show you how to do it. So first, let's go to Yahoo Finance. What company you want to take a look at? Anyone, let's take a look.
Disney.
Let's take a look at Disney. All right, so the graph they give you is, just today. But if we go 5-year, there you see 5-year. Now, Here's where you want to do the technical analysis. You click on chart, and what does it have? Does it have 5-year? No, it doesn't. No. So let's go to 5-year. Now here's where we say we want a. Now look at all the dozens of technical indicators. I think they're all garbage, but you decide. And then we want the moving average. So we want a 50-day simple, and look at all the different types of moving averages, exponential, double exponential, triple exponential. We just want the simple moving average. Don't mess with the offset, and I don't even know what this means. Oh, close. Yeah, we want the closing price. Okay, so notice that the first one's going to be purple. You know what? Let's dim the lights. On the right-hand side, down twice. I know it's bizarre. Okay, good. So the first color is going to be purple. So let's save that. So there. So what this is doing here, the blue is the daily maneuvers, and you see it's very chaotic. And the 50-day is smoothing it out. Then what we're going to do is we're going to now do another moving average, but this one will be the 200-day moving average. And that's the one that they talk about the most, the golden cross, the death cross. And we'll change the color to, green or something. Save. So now, and see when you move the mouse, you move the wheel, it changes the years. Okay, so let's go back a little bit. Okay. So now the green is the 200-day, the 200-day moving average. So when the purple, the 50-day goes below the 200-day moving average. That's called the death cross. That's a bad time. That's the time to sell. But in this case, it was already too late. And then when the 50-day moves above the 200-day, that's supposedly a good time to sell. I mean, buy. Was that a good time to buy? Yeah, not bad. Not bad. But now, you had to hold on when it dropped, which I guess, and there was a spike. See, that's the volume. These little bars here mean the volume. So that something happened that day, and Disney volume spiked, and it fell. That might have been that John Carter movie, which was a total disaster. They paid $200 million for it. But see, you follow it all the way up, and now it didn't quite go below. And since then, Disney spiked because something happened really cool with Disney. I forget if that was a couple weeks ago. A couple of days ago, I guess. So you were doing... Now, somebody in the online class said, ooh, I like the 50-day and the 15-day. So she was actually playing with it. So let's get rid of... Let's go... how do you... This is where I get lost. Ask me if I know what I'm doing. Okay, so if we change this guy, if we right-click on this... No, it doesn't work. How do we get rid of it? Oh, well, I guess we go here. So let's get rid of the 300-day. Or how can we change it? No, let's get rid of it. And what she said, and she was excited about this, she thought this was cool, is she liked the 50-day and the 15-day. And I've heard people who use this. So let's use that. She was much more excited about that. She said you could do. She was excited about the 15-day and the 50-day. That's the same idea. When the shorter one, in this case, the 15-day, which is the green. Wait a minute, right? Yeah, 15-day. When the green goes below the purple, the 15-day goes below the longer one, 50-day, that's a good time to sell. Well, again, it was already too late here, in my humble opinion. Here, I guess, you know, you still had a little bit upside because it's already jumped, but you already missed that. And then here, too late. Here, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of technical analysis. But you guys are going to get 10 points. All you got to do is write something that sounds reasonable, even though you don't know what the hell you're doing, and turn it in, you get 10 points. Is that easy? And then I ask you, and the reason I'm not trying to give you free 10 points, I really want you to see what you think, and then play with it. Play with the Bollinger Bands, whatever the hell they're supposed to be. Put in the Bollinger Bands. They're really popular Bollinger Bands. Let's put those in. And that's supposed to, I guess, something to do with the range. I don't know. Look it up. Look it up and see what you think. And then there are all these technical. So just go online and start looking at these guys. But, you know, you could become a technical analyst on Wall Street making $500,000 and laughing at Piano. And you can say, if the market doesn't go up or go down, it'll go sideways and make that much money. Is that cool? I like it. Okay, so Thursday, bring the calculator, one page of notes, Scantron, one page of handwritten notes. I'll have the formula sheets and be awesome. Get plenty of rest.
Unfortunately, Thursday, I have a mandatory training for work.
In the morning or in the afternoon?
Yeah, in the morning from 8 to 4.
Can you?
I was wondering, I know on Monday, I have, all my classes canceled. I can come at that time.
Okay, Monday. Send me an email. What time good is Monday? Early? Let me look on my phone.
From 11 and after. Well, 11:30 and after.
Okay, so let's try for noon. Send me an email, okay, because I'll forget. I'll have my phone with me. If it's not on my phone, it doesn't exist. It's not in my agenda. Okay, here's what you do.
Wasn't another option not doing, two of them?
No, that was part of the three.
No,
I wanted you to do three. So do a third one. I wanted you to do three, but in this case, you did, who'd you do, FedEx and UPS? Why don't you do DHL? I think you can buy DHL on the New York Stock Exchange. Or it doesn't matter, just do any company.
Okay.
And then over here, just remember we talked about cyclical and growth companies. So what is a company like an airline company? What do you think? Well, Southwest, I guess people would call it a blue chip. It's not quite large. It's not, look how far, it's getting big. I think it's like $30 billion. But it's cyclical. Because more activity, economic activity, people fly more. Okay, questions?
I know that's going to be late for class because I thought the exam was Thursday.
No, exam is Thursday.
No, yeah, I just want to say.
Look on the website. It always tells you when the next exam is.
Oh, no, yeah, I know. but I sent you an email. So
okay. I like it. Students will come up to me and go, did you get my email? I said, I don't know. When did you send it? Oh, about 10 minutes ago. Okay, Kathleen, no problem. Sorry, teasing you. Yes?
I don't know how to hold these. I'm not sure I'm doing any of these.
Okay, this one is exactly like this one.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the interest? Zero coupon bond.
Okay.
What's the interest?
Zero.
Zero. So we take zero times whatever is,
mm-hmm.
and then we take 1,000 times the
okay.
present value, not the 5%, prime okay. and present value multiplier. Now this one, oh, you did it. You figured it out.
No.
Tricky. Okay, good job. This is 121? Okay, cool. Somebody turn on the light, please. Okay, turn this off. Turn that off.